freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says?
No, he's not a friend of mine.
Subscribe to receive every episode at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Ah, we stink, man.
Now, here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
No way!
Hey, everybody. It's Brock and Salk Podcast. Brock, Salk, howdy. No Kyle this week. He is homesick. Should add a little something to that open. You can now go to what? BrockandSalkPodcast.com. Another place to find your way to this
or
lovely podcast.
Brock Salk Podcast.
That works also. You don't need the and?
No, you don't have to.
You can just go to BrockSalkPodcast.
But don't go to BrockSalk.com.
No.
Or BrockandSalk.com.
That takes you to like a Chinese auctioneering site, it seems.
Legitimately.
Like. Yeah, all right. So, you know, you win some, you lose some on that. Speaking of which, how about them Seahawks, Brock? Here we are.
Amazing.
Here we are.
Yes.
They're two wins away from the Super Bowl, which is bizarre.
They're not going to San Francisco.
No, they, I think, and we kind of cover this, we'll go back to the game too. I don't know if they can win in Green Bay. I think that's a tough challenge for this team in particular. I don't think it's a great matchup for them. But if they do win in Green Bay, I think they're going to the Super Bowl.
Mm.
I think they beat San Francisco in San Francisco, and I think they beat Minnesota in Seattle. I don't know whether they can beat Green Bay on the road. I'm not saying I think they
won't. Would you rather them be in San Francisco this week? Were you rooting for the Saints?
Yes.
You were rooting for the Saints.
I also just, I don't like the Vikings, and I kind of like the Saints. So I was rooting for the Saints sort of on general principle, because if the Seahawks aren't going to win, I would say the Saints are my second favorite team. So I kind of root. I like Drew Brees.
I mean, they have been since year two of our show.
I've always, no,
when I basically said to you, can you imagine, can you imagine Tom Benson in the Saints?
And Sean Payton.
Lifting the Lombardi trophy?
Yeah, yeah, I actually could imagine it, and then they did. But I've liked them since way back. It's probably just the uniforms. The Saints have, I think, one of the two or three best uniforms in the league. So as a kid, I probably just gravitated towards them, and Craig Ironhead Hayward and some of the fun guys they've
and
had
a pretty
over the years.
So. Passionate fan base.
All right, the Seahawks, they beat Philadelphia. They had the largest margin of victory of any of the four games.
Yeah, why are you chuckling, bro?
What do you mean, why?
Yeah, they won by eight. They knocked Wentz out. They win by eight.
Yeah, they dominated.
They played Seahawks football through and through.
Sure did. They sure did.
This is how they win games.
They throw landmines in front of themselves, and then they leap right over them, and at the end of the day, they have Russell Wilson, and you don't.
That's right.
They have Russell Wilson,
and
your quarterback got hurt. They have Russell Wilson, and you have a 40-year-old who hasn't played in forever, and who I believe was commuting back and forth to the facility and going home for a few days every week.
Yes.
I mean, like, they have Russell Wilson, and you don't, and that's why they're here, and you're not.
And that's why Pete plays stylistically the way he does. It's why he knows the limitations of this team. He knows the strengths of this team. He knows that he has Russell Wilson, and I think for him, it is always just get it to the late rounds. Let's just get it to the late rounds, and I'm going to trust that we will find a way to win. If that means rope-a-dope, and that means suck it up, buttercup, and that means you better get ready for these kind of games, well, they've been all season long. Seemingly every single week, no matter what the circumstances are, these games are going to come down to the wire. Even if it is a 40-year-old Josh McCown who looked so uncomfortable early, and yet they kind of got in a rhythm, and they had 20 first downs, and they moved the ball between the 20s and went up and down the field and ultimately could not finish down in the red zone, which was by far, to me, the biggest reason they won that game.
Yeah, I started kind of going through the biggest plays of that game, and I think one of them is the not, it wasn't a false start, it was a delay of game, actually, that Philadelphia took first and goal from the 5.
Yes.
And all of a sudden, you back them up 5 yards, and now it's first and goal from the 10. I don't think they were up for that. First goal from the 5, the way they were running the ball, and I don't know that they score, I don't know that they get in, but I think they got a pretty good shot to do so. All of, especially the way the game felt at that time. All of a sudden, you back them up 5 yards behind the sticks, and they look like the Seahawks. I was like, give up! We're behind the sticks! Forget it! Call a draw! Get out of here! We can't do anything! It's first and 20! There's no chance! I mean, like, the Seahawks are bizarre with that. But it did feel as if that happened to Philadelphia. So you're right. What the defense was able to do in the red zone, obviously the 2 fourth down stops. But then you have Russell, and, you know, I kind of make fun of them behind the sticks and some of the problems they had. Russell, I think, had 3 of the 5 maybe biggest plays in this game, I would argue. right? I mean, and one of them, I think more important, not necessarily the biggest play overall, but I would argue the biggest play for me, because it comes on a 3rd and 15, and it shows that Russell Wilson's still capable of doing something that I didn't know he could.
And Russell takes the shotgun snap, has some room, going to scramble out to the left side, going to run, still looking. Dodgers one man, what a run by Russ! Holy smoke, Russell Wilson gets a first down across the 35. It looked like he might think about sliding and then juked one of the defensive players and goes on to pick up the first, an 18-yard gain by Russ.
That's 3rd and 15.
They converted 5 3rd and 10 plus.
Yeah.
Let's be, I mean, Russell.
What do you mean, they?
And Russell had 96% of the offense. I mean, Russell largely converted 5 3rd and 10 plus in that one with his legs. And an earlier one on a third down as well, where he ran for a bunch. I mean, yeah, Russell ran. Russell showed a little more burst, a little more speed, a little more quickness.
He, for the first time this year on that play, made somebody miss.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not in the pocket. He's made people miss in the pocket. I don't want to exaggerate. Obviously, you know, it's a free rusher, and Russell dodges, moves out of the way. He's done that all year long. But you have not seen him, at least to my memory. I cannot remember one play this year where Russ juked somebody and beat them in the open field. Mm-hmm. Not one. I've seen him get caught from behind. I mean, I mean, not like
I've seen
not
him,
by Ziggy Ansah or
I've
anything.
Seen
but
him,
I've seen him get caught from behind.
I've seen him slide and avoid contact.
I've seen him do that. I've seen
80% of the time.
I've seen him attempt to evade tacklers and get dragged down. We've seen that this year. This was the first play, and it comes on a huge third down conversion. You know, second half of the game where every single thing counts. It's 3rd and 15, midfield somewhere, and Russell comes up with an 18-yard run that involves juking a legitimate defender in the open field. That is a huge sign for me, and I think we saw it right off the bat. He runs right away in the first or second drive. He picks up 22 yards, I think it was, and then kind of sets the scene for, hey, different Russ, playoff Russ, deadly accurate. No mistake. Did he make one mistake? In the game? I guess he missed DK down the right side.
I think he thought, well, that one he gets hit on, so he has to let go of a little bit earlier.
I don't think he made a single mistake.
It was a
mistake.
Low ball to Tyler Lockett on the right side, short. Okay. It was a couple of those
He essentially tiny ones. Played mistake.
He took one chance where he thought they jumped off sides, which they did.
Yeah.
So he threw into some double coverage. I was like, oh my gosh. Thankfully, that ball you know, bounces off.
He played almost perfect football. And you add to that the ability to not just scramble to throw, which he did, hitting Lockett a couple of times, the throw to DK Metcalf.
DJ Moore.
Yeah, I mean, DJ Moore. David Moore. That's all right. Don't worry
DJ
about
Moore's
it.
In Carolina.
He didn't really scramble as much on the David Moore play as much as just held it and held it and held it and then finally found him another huge third down conversion. Russ was perfect.
Yeah. And he had to be. And he's going to have to be this upcoming weekend, and he's going to have to be the weekend after that. And, you know, what did we say before this year ever began more than we ever did in 9 years, 8 years, whatever it's been for Russell, 18 years? This is his team. I mean, this is his team. And I got a bunch of takeaways and tidbits for the next segment.
Were you worried that would change at all with Marshawn coming in?
Not really.
That it would change any of the tenor and the tone and kind of the way this thing has been?
Not at this phase of the game. If that was week 4 or week 5, no. I think there's 16 weeks under their belt. I really did not have that much apprehension. I was curious to see what and how Marshawn would tackle this thing. But this is Russell's team. We have said that going into this year. And to watch him, man, to watch him foster that relationship, because as much as we talk about Russell, which we should, Mike, and you've got, I don't know, do you have 10 more takeaways on Russell?
No, but
like
I got a few.
10, yeah, you got a bunch of them.
I got a few.
I think you have to put right next to him in this game, DK Metcalf. I mean, that was the greatest rookie receiver performance in the history of this league in their very first outing. That was a DK who in that building, 5-6 weeks ago, couldn't function. Had a bunch of drops and didn't play particularly well and wanted to make up for that. And that is a DK that I think as much as anybody else, if I want to point to and say this is Russell's team, Russell has put up marvelous numbers before. Russell has won a Super Bowl. Russell's been to another Super Bowl. Russell's been on big stage. Russell has done any number of things. But has Russell really grown a single individual the way he has grown DK Metcalf this season? Where from day one, he said, this dude can be a future Hall of Famer. This dude is going to train with me in Cali in Mexico. This dude, I'm going to send volumes to of notes every single week. This dude is going to be my guy. You're going to be my pet project, and we are going to do this thing because you are going to make me look really good. I can't remember someone over 8 years. And to me, that is like the embodiment of what is Russell's team? right? How has he really taken this over? When could he, who could he have done that with in the past? That was Doug's territory. Don't come in my receiver room. Don't you dare talk to Tyler Lockett. And that's great. And you and Tyler are like-minded and you got a lot of relationship and Tyler's awesome. But Tyler's in my receiver room. Like this, and rightfully so. Like he's a protective veteran of his turf, right? And he's going to lead and help lead that group.
Is it rightfully so?
Well, it was pretty good. It won a lot of games and Doug was a pretty awesome player.
If Doug Baldwin was here this year, what would DK Metcalf's season have been?
Dramatically worse. He would have been so much worse if Doug Baldwin was here because there would have been the traditional wide receiver cast system where he'd be on the bottom and the veterans would be on the top and he'd be constantly in Russell Wilson's ear trying to make sure that he got the targets to the guys who were open and not trying to force the ball to somebody.
For 75% of Russell's career, it was Tom Cable's O-line. I got it. And then over the last few, it's been a little bit of Dwayne. And you know what? A quarterback wants a lineman to take over that room. You don't want to have to take over the O-line room. No, no, no. You're not. You wear a red jersey. You don't get hit. You don't play at the line of scrimmage. You don't do what those dudes have to do. Let Dwayne Brown take that over. He has. What other player? Marshawn, for 70% of Russell's career, dominated that running back room with the way he was going to go about it, right? Turbo tried a little bit.
Robert Turbo's like Russell's best friend. He's literally here because he's Russell's friend.
They were in each
it's
other's
certainly not because he's a good running back.
No, but he wasn't here very long, and he hadn't played a huge role, right? Turbin, in his years, is not a big factor for the Seahawks. I think DK Metcalf is representative of Russell's leadership more than anything else because I was racking my brain trying to think of another guy that he just brought along from day one where he said, no, we are going to do this. And to watch the game that dude played.
Well, I mean, to be fair, the only other, you know, good receiver they've had other than Doug Baldwin and DK Metcalf is Tyler Lockett. And as you said, I agree with you. I think that was sort of Doug's domain. So, I mean, maybe he has, and it just hasn't worked. I mean, David Moore, I guess, in some ways, he sort of helped do that with. I mean, I don't think I put Gary Jennings on that list. Did Russ just decide right off the bat he wasn't interested in Gary Jennings?
No.
This guy can't play.
But to your point, Brock, this year being the first year where it's truly his team, no other voices. And he's also got Jacob Hollister, which the league basically cast out and said he's not good enough. He's a practice squad player. Yeah. And he turned him into a red zone threat and a consistent target.
Oh, he's the third best receiver on this team.
Mm-hmm. At least,
Make no mistakes. There's Tyler Lockett, there's DK Metcalf, and then there's Jacob Hollister. He is the third best receiver on this team. Well, he's not
but
playing.
There were three.
What do you like to say? Like your star players, your best players. Like you look at these teams. There were three elite players on that field in Philadelphia. There were three. Fletcher Cox, who destroyed the whole line of scrimmage.
I don't want to talk about that.
Russell Wilson and DK Metcalf. Those three the three best players on the field who made like the game-changing, oh my gosh, you can't cover him, you can't tackle him, you can't defend him, you can run full speed and blow by anybody. If Russell had a tick longer on that go route, DK Metcalf has 240 yards in that game.
Maybe. He probably doesn't need the last completion, but
maybe
I get
not.
Your point. I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, if Russell puts that one on him, he's gone. I mean, he's already by the guy. He's
correct.
A physical freak. He's gigantic. He's so fast.
And he's doing this as a rookie.
Yeah.
Playing to this
you're
level.
You're not supposed to be able to do that
you're
as a
not.
Rookie wide receiver.
No,
it's so
you're
funny.
Not.
You kind of look at the Seahawks rookie class and, you know, first pick their first pick,
LJ Collier,
doing nothing, playing a position that you are supposed to be able to come right in and have some success in because it's not a thinking, learning position.
And it's your weakest
massive
position.
Need. Like, you have to have somebody.
Oh, you think they have
please.
Need there at defensive end? Your second pick is Marquise Blair, who, as far as I can tell, every time he's in there looks pretty good. But for whatever reason, he's stuck being their dime
player. Six snaps in their dime pack.
Don't understand for the life of me why. I get why he's not in there when
Quandre,
Diggs is back.
Yep.
But last week.
Crazy.
For what?
I don't know.
Anyway. And then your third pick was Metcalf, and he plays the position that usually takes a long time to get chemistry, to understand the league. Look at Golden Tate. I mean, is probably the best example here. For the first couple of years, we're going, I don't know if this guy's ever going to get it. And then it turns out he did and really goes on to a fantastic career. The fact that Metcalf gets it this quickly, I think, is fantastic. And we'll see what he's able to do now going forward. It allowed the Seahawks to do something that I thought was dumb. It worked out. Obviously, in a million years, I would not have done this. 3rd and 10, ooh. Minute and a half left. Ooh. The other team still has one timeout. I'm sorry. I'm not doing this.
Blitz is coming. Russ is going to let it fly. He's got Metcalf deep. Metcalf reaches up. He makes the catch near midfield. What a play call by the Seahawks. Just throw it deep, and Metcalf makes the catch. He has been spectacular today, and the Seahawks now can use up this last timeout of the Eagles and can run this clock down.
Are you doing that?
Verse cover zero right there? Yeah.
You are?
Get out of here.
You are not.
Oh, yes, I am.
You are not.
You think I'm running the ball and want to see my defense try to defend one more time?
Yeah, because you're up by eight. I think so no matter what, you don't lose.
You're up eight. You're giving them a minute 25 with no timeouts, needing to go the whole field with Josh McCown?
You don't
trust. That's what I'm doing.
You don't trust Russ to put that ball where it's going to be DK's or nobody's?
It's not that. It's just there's too much that can go wrong. It didn't, thank God, and it's a great play by Russ. He underthrew him a little bit. I mean, he made it a little bit more challenging than it needed to be. DK goes up and makes a great catch, but how many balls have we seen him drop this year? At least a dozen. Come on. Brock, that is a
that
super dangerous play.
And if a phenomenal call.
And if you don't get
low
that.
Low risk.
What do you mean low risk? That's incredibly high risk.
No. There's
you're losing
here.
Your
okay.
mind.
Stop it.
No. It was,
stop.
No, no,
you
no.
need a daily
whoa,
radio
whoa,
show.
You watch
you're
your
completely
what
out of
what are you talking about?
Listen,
how is it low risk?
Because there's one defender.
So what?
The only reason, that's a check with
First of all, there's two defenders there when he catches it.
No. You know, that's
there
a,
are.
You know that's a check with me.
But he catches it over two defenders. There's two defenders.
He runs by. It is a fake bubble screen. It's cover zero.
Brock.
Each of those three. No. You listen to me, both
no.
of you. Those three defenders out there are the only. There's no safety. Those three are defending the three receivers in a bunch set. You're running a fake bubble screen. And then DK, you're asking to run as fast as you can right by that guy that's flat-footed. That is a low-risk play.
Oh,
that is where you're 6'3".
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
No, it isn't.
Yes, it is.
No, it isn't.
Brock,
yes,
that
it
play
is.
In a vacuum with no clock and no game situation,
low risk.
I understand that that is a very high percentage play.
Risk.
However, there are 3,000 things
that's
that
right.
go wrong on that play that cost you
it's
the game.
It's not a high percentage play. Don't miss
no,
my words.
It is a high percentage play. That's what you're trying to explain.
Saying
it
something
is, low
is not high percentage,
risk.
But is low risk does not make sense.
Low risk.
You're losing it.
Yeah.
Low.
We got to move on because this is one of the craziest things you've ever said.
That was a tremendous call. That's cover zero. That is a, if they're going to come up, we're going to have a run play call. More than likely, they had two plays called because Russell manipulated the line of scrimmage beautifully all game. And if they come up and they got two safeties, you know what we're not doing? That play. And I'm not putting the ball in harm's way with anybody in middle field. But if they've got nobody, and I mean zero, zip, zilch, anybody more than 8 yards down the field, DK, you're going to blow by him as he did by 6 yards. Blew right by him, and Russell, you're going to throw it up to him, and either he's going to go up and get it or not.
You're going to see this one differently. I'm going to make Josh McCown go the length of the field, needing a touchdown and a 2-point conversion with no timeouts, and take my chances. And obviously, I don't like my defense that much, but they had stepped up in the fourth quarter. They hadn't allowed him in the end zone all day. You're going to need him to score. And I know Pete calls 8 points a 2-possession game. It's not, but it does require them to score and then complete the 2-point conversion. And even if they do that, you're tied. So I just
you know what I was shocked by?
I'm sorry. I
was shocked by Doug Peterson going
I was
going
to come to – yeah. I thought he made mistakes both times.
Sheesh.
I don't think I would – now, I was hanging out with my buddy Chris, and he totally disagreed. He thought he did the right thing, that he had to go for it there, that he needed to score a touchdown one way or another, and once you got down into the red zone, you might as well take
with
the shot.
With 5-6 minutes left?
I know. I disagreed, especially on the first one. But –
you kick the field goal, you go down five. If they want to continue to play conservative,
that's right.
Then you take two shots at Trey Flowers, let him tackle your guy, and then take four shots into the end zone.
I'm totally with Doug Peterson on that. They had no chance to score touchdowns.
Oh,
that
I don't
was
know.
The closest they could ever get.
I disagree with that. And here's the thing, and this is just sort of a truism for me of the NFL. This is not based on analytics, Brock. I know how much you love analytics.
Mm-hmm.
But I guarantee you if somebody out there runs a report on this, they will find that this is true. If you're the Eagles in that spot and your choices are being tied but giving Russell Wilson the ball with 2 minutes and two timeouts, God forbid he have all three because obviously they've wasted one with an inability to call a play.
Mm-hmm.
Russell Wilson with 2 minutes and two timeouts, tie game, you lose. You lose. Just give up. You might as well just walk off the field. You've already lost the game. Russell's going to beat you. On the other hand, if you're down five, which he could have been, and you're giving the Seahawks the ball, the odds are they're going to run into the line of scrimmage three times and punt the ball back to you, and you're going to get another shot to come down and try to score.
I'm sorry, was Fletcher Cox the most dominant player?
He was.
For your team?
But in a two-minute situation, you take a lot of that out of it.
Okay.
And that's why. I think it is easier in the NFL to kick a field goal in a two-minute drill for a good quarterback than it is to gain 10 yards just by running the ball when they know it's coming. It is easier to go down and kick a field goal in a two-minute drill than it is to run out the clock with a running game.
Yes.
That's just the facts of the NFL. We watch it every single week. Mm-hmm. If you have a good quarterback, you should be able to go down and kick a field goal whenever you want in a two-minute drill.
As long as you can protect. As long as Aaron Donald
or
Fletcher
Cox. But they were protecting.
Cox.
That wasn't the problem with Fletcher Cox in the game. He destroyed the running game. They rushed 17 times for 19 yards. He blew up everything in the running game, but Russell had enough time. So he was only sacked once, and he moved around in the pocket. And in a two-minute drill, guys like Fletcher Cox, you toss them out the window.
So to my
They're not
point,
relevant.
When you're down eight, and you've got the most dominant player who's shutting down their run game, and at that point, the Seahawks had converted 5 third-and-10 pluses, which was a huge anomaly. Then you know what? I'm going to go down 5 with 6 minutes to go. I'm not talking the second time. I'm talking the first time with 6 minutes to go. Make it a one-score
game
where one go route, where one huge PI, where one play in my building with that defensive player.
I know.
He went for it, and I was like, oh, yes.
I guess his thinking, though, is, and on the first one, I think this is why it makes some more sense. The first one is, I need a touchdown either way. Right, so it's already a one score game. I can already throw that deep go route, hope for the pass interference, and try to score on it. So being down 8 versus being down 5,
20 first downs. Collinsworth's like, well, I don't know if they're going to get down here. They're going up and down the field between the 20s. They had 20. They had more first downs in that game than the Seahawks did. Right,
amazing.
Yes, because
it really is amazing.
Yeah, well, there were a lot of completions and a lot of yards, and there was no pass rush. You know, to getting home with a 4-man rush. I don't know. When they went for it right there, the game was over. Once they did not get that and
well,
the running
true.
Back dropped the ball, it's like there's no way they're
going
to
I mean, you know, if the Seahawks don't convert, if DK Metcalf drops that ball, which would not have been out of the question as he's leaping up in the air to catch it, they get the ball back with a minute and a half and a timeout. Now, granted, they still have Josh McCown.
And he's got to run a two-minute drill.
I know, and he's throwing
something
the ball
he's
to
not
God
done
knows
all
who.
Season.
I understand all that, but minute and a half and a timeout is more than enough time to go down and score a touchdown.
Anywho, we better get to your Russell stuff. That's enough of everything else.
Well, I just, you know, Russ was amazing.
Yes.
He really was. And I guess I don't need to go through a huge list. I mean, you know the plays. The third down conversion we played earlier with his legs, and the big third down conversion to David Moore was just a great play. Waited and waited and patient, and really good protection on that play, which allows it to develop.
Yep.
And
he sat in the hole when he had good protection.
The touchdown to Metcalf was incredible, and what a great throw he made, a great catch, the whole deal. But with Russ, to me, it's his legs. It's always his legs that put him over the top. He is a great pocket quarterback. He is right there amongst the best pocket quarterbacks in the game.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that has always made Russ a cut above for me is the ability to add his legs to it, whether it's the escapability, the read option design run plays, or just you know, taking off when the play breaks down and picking up 20 yards on a running play. That's what sets him just that much better than everybody else. It's why I think he's different. It's why I give him all the money that he made this offseason, the huge contract. He can do all of those things. And for most of this year, as much as he's been an MVP candidate, and obviously he's lost that in the final few weeks of the season to
Lamar
Jackson. Thank you. But it's his legs. When he can truly add that element, he becomes more than just a great quarterback. He becomes the elite, special, unbelievable, and I would argue right now one of the three best players in football. I don't mean one of the three best quarterbacks. I mean, he's one of the two or three best players in football. There's a reason he's going to finish as the runner-up, I think, in the MVP. Who else are you putting there this year besides Lamar Jackson? And by the way, we'll see what he does in the playoffs. Last year, he couldn't hit the broadside of a barn. Could not hit the broadside. They thought about bringing in Joe Flacco in the playoffs last year because he was so inaccurate. Will that happen this year? Probably not. He's been really good, and I don't want to take anything away from him. He's a blast to watch. He seems like a great kid, and I'm really excited about the Lamar Jackson era, but we haven't seen it yet in the playoffs. We've seen Russ have crazy comebacks. We've seen the two-minute drills. The NFC Championship game against Green Bay will go down after throwing all those picks, most of which were Jermaine Kearse's fault, coming back and winning that game, the comeback, and the third. It was amazing. Russ has done all of those things. And he is he the best player in football right now? This is not a dumb question. I don't know whether the answer is yes, but it's not a dumb question. Is Russell Wilson the, I don't just mean the best quarterback, is he the best player in football right now?
Is he better than the guy he's playing Sunday?
I think he might be. Based on what I've seen this year.
I think that's the beauty of what's coming up this Sunday. I think that's what's the beauty between these two guys that don't particularly like each other.
No, they don't.
I don't think Russell likes Aaron. He will never say that publicly. I know that Aaron doesn't like Russell, and he takes his shots at him and has through the years.
I totally understand why they don't like each other either. They are cut from different cloths.
Russell's 4-3 against him. Neither is one in their opponent's buildings. Russell's 4-0 at home. Aaron's 3-0 at Lambeau Field. These two, and if you're Aaron Rodgers, to your point, this year it's all been about Lamar Jackson won and Russell was second team All-Pro.
Yeah, and he was never mentioned.
Nope.
Rodgers?
Not once. But his Rodgers team, was never mentioned.
But his team was 13-3. His team is the number two seed. They've taken some of the burden off of him over the course of the season.
He ran the head coach out that he hated and got his own guy in there.
And they got to run the ball a little more.
Watch them play this year.
They got to play a little defense. Yeah, they've played a lot like the Seahawks. Right? They played a lot like the Seahawks.
They don't look that good.
Ugly football.
They don't play dominant. They don't take huge risks. They don't try to run people out of the building.
They let the Detroit Lions hang around until the very end. I mean, like they've done a lot of Seahawks
like
things
end,
this year.
In the end, he's 13.
Yeah, they got Aaron Rodgers, and he's really good.
Yep, and that's what Sunday is going to come down to.
Is it? If it comes down to Russell versus Aaron Rodgers, I think that'll be fun. If it comes down to the Seahawks offensive line unable to stop some random, you know, Za'Darius Smith, who I know is really good.
He's not random.
I know, he's not random.
Yeah, he's not random.
But there's always like one guy. What was that guy a few years ago? Who just was it Mike Daniels who just completely wrecked everything they tried to do? It's like, okay, well, glad we bothered. He was better than Fletcher Cox was on Sunday.
Yes.
They could not do anything because he was just tossing people out of the way.
Yep.
If that happens this week and we don't get a chance to see Russell actually live up to the hype, that will be such a shame. I don't think it'll happen.
Like the Arizona,
such a shame.
Like the Arizona home game where Chandler Jones just took
just
it
over. Ruined the game for you.
You couldn't do anything.
You want this game to be decided by Russell Wilson and not Joey Hunt.
That's right. And I don't think it would be Joey Hunt, but it might end up being George Fant and Jermaine Effetti. Hopefully, you know, I don't know when you're listening to this podcast. Maybe by then we'll have some ideas as to whether or not Dwayne Brown's going to play.
Doubtful.
As of now, he's doubtful. Jake thinks he's going to play, by the way.
Yeah.
Jake is calling a shot, says Dwayne Brown's going to play.
Jake called a shot on DK, all right? First minicamp, Jake called a shot on DK.
He couldn't catch.
Called a shot on Jacob Hollister.
Jake Heaps was the first one on Jacob Hollister.
He was.
Don't tell the professor that if he's listening.
They're both very.
But he doesn't know how to get to
very
the podcast, so he's not listening.
That's true.
You know what?
He doesn't know that it's BrockSalkPodcast.com.
One last thing. He's gone to the Brock and Salk podcast.
He's gone to BrockAndSalk.com, which is a mess.
Don't go there.
Whatever you do.
He's been listening to whatever's there for a long time.
Don't go.
Hasn't made any sense to him.
There's a decent chance you'll end up with some sort of malware ransom note or something. Like, don't do it.
What he doesn't understand when you guys started speaking another language, but he's going to figure it out.
What's the name of the group? Howdy? Or should we say their name
or no?
I don't think we're allowed to talk about
any of say their name.
Let me just say this lastly. Put a little bow on Russell Wilson. And I think Collinsworth
and
Michaels.
Please don't put a little bow on Russell
I think
Wilson.
Collinsworth and Michaels do an amazing job.
Just don't put a bow on
You know what?
Russell.
Let me put a little bow on
with
your
his hair,
conversation.
With his little hair that's sticking out after the game. Please don't put a bow on Russell Wilson.
Plus 3 seconds. And they had that graphic in the game in Philadelphia. Those plays where Russell extended beyond 3 seconds in the pocket, whether it was to DK, whether it was to David Moore, whether it was the scramble, when he can exceed 3+ seconds and still Mike have the ability to have his eyes down the field to make plays, that will be the key come Sunday. Can they just give him a shot? Just give him air in the pocket. Just allow him to create. And he will manipulate.
If they can do that,
I
do think there's a really good shot they win. I mean, I think they can. I don't know whether they'll stop Aaron Rodgers, although there's a decent chance that, like, you know, Quentin Jefferson will fall on him, injure him, and we'll end up watching DeShone Kizer for the rest of the game. Like, that just seems to be the way the Seahawks, they injured Ben Roethlisberger, they injured Carson Wentz. Like, they just seem to find their way against a whole bunch. You know, they didn't have to play Drew Brees.
Yep.
I know they still lost that game, but still, it's been remarkable. Matt Schaub they played against instead of Matt Ryan. I mean, the Seahawks have won all these games, and it is bizarre how some of us have. I got to tell you, I hate the Packers. I can't stand them. And it's not even that I think Aaron Rodgers is smarmy, although he is.
He is.
I know, but like some of the reasons he's smarmy, I don't like. I kind of agree with him. So like, it's not that I specifically don't like. I just don't like them. I don't like the organization. I've hated them my whole life. I've never liked the Green Bay Packers.
I like their organization.
You do?
I like their fans.
No.
I like Lambeau Field.
They're obnoxious.
They're obnoxious. Lambeau's my
I can't stand them. I like them less than I like the Niners. I can't stand the Packers. And I really hope they end up going to Green Bay and doing it in that building, which has been a house of horrors for Russell Wilson and the Seahawks over the last few years. All right, we're going to do something here in a moment we haven't done in forever, Brock. I hope you remember how to give some takeaways and maybe some tidbits. Yeah, we're pulling out all the stops. Hey, maybe it's the playoffs. Maybe it's the Green Bay week thing. I don't know. We're going to go around the NFL in a few minutes. And then it sounds like maybe even some good news, bad news, no news at the end here. Yeah, this podcast is taking on a life of its own. Right now, though, Brock and Salk favorite. It's time for some takeaways and tidbits.
Takeaways.
Okay, what do you want first? Takeaway?
I want a takeaway.
You want a takeaway first?
Give me a takeaway.
Tidbits.
No, a takeaway.
No, I don't need a tidbit. I need a takeaway. Right. And after my announcement in our last conversation about the low-risk nature of Schottenheimer's play call at the end of the game, 3rd and 10.
Which was untrue.
Which you and Howdy just poo-pooed
and
peed all over. I'm going to try this again and see if you guys have the same take. That felt like Brian Schottenheimer's best called game as a Seahawk. From beginning to end, that felt like one of Brian Schottenheimer. No, that not one of. That felt like on that stage, especially after a clunker against Arizona just a couple weeks ago, where there was no rhythm, they could not function at all. That felt like from the explosive plays, which were way up, the sacks, which were way down, giving Russell enough time to consistently and constantly manipulate the line of scrimmage to get to what he wanted to. The 3rd and 10 aggressiveness and the guts to call that play at the end of the game. I thought from beginning to end, and yes, they could not run it at all, but they still at least tried to, minimized possessions, kept the possessions at only 9 per team, and allowed them to play the game to Pete's style and philosophy, which is get it near the end, trust that Philly's going to make a mistake, which, by the way, they never did. He never had field position. He never had momentum that he got to capitalize on. They were amazing on 3rd down. Philadelphia was a team that pressured people.
Man, I'm sorry.
Philadelphia is a team that got off the field on 3rd down, and the Seahawks won both of those.
I don't like that. I don't know. Yeah. I don't think I can agree with you on this. I don't think he called necessarily a bad game, and I wouldn't have come in today to crush Brian Schottenheimer, but I did not think that he was one of the main reasons they won. I mean, the reason they were in all those 3rd and longs is that he called them into 3rd and longs. I think Russell.
Oh, there were 11 penalties.
Yeah,
there were pass interference.
Some of
there were
false starts. Pass
there
interference.
Was 11 penalties.
Yeah,
in 9 possessions as a team, you had 11 penalties.
Yeah.
Yeah,
those weren't all on the offense.
No, but there
a
was
lot of those were on the defense. A bunch of them were on Trey Flowers.
Yeah, a couple on McDougal.
And one of them, you know, they had to delay a game, right, which was on him.
Jacob Hollister, 2
false
penalties.
False starting at the goal line.
Jermaine Fetty, false start.
They broke a huddle.
Jacob Hollister, pass interference.
They broke a huddle.
One time.
With 7 seconds
one
left.
One time.
How are they not going to play it?
One time.
Yeah, but you can't afford one time. You
the
can't.
Playoffs.
We're not talking about, like, you know, the most comfortable. Get a play ready to call and call it.
Well, you know, there were also headset issues.
Oh, well, excuse me.
Okay.
Yeah, late in the game.
And
I
by
was
the way,
headset
even
issues.
With that, there was one time where that didn't happen, which still could be Russell's responsibility to have a play ready and get to.
I watched that game, and my feeling, and this is, I'm not a Brian Schottenheimer hater, quite the opposite. I think he's done a really good job. I've given him a lot of credit for Russell's season, for the fact that he helped develop DK Metcalf and what Tyler Lockett's done in the running game. I think he deserves a ton of credit for what they've done this season. I watched that game, and it felt to me more like Russell overcoming than it did with Brian Schottenheimer giving him all of these great opportunities. There was Russell scrambling around and doing this, Russell making a great play and doing that, Russell holding the ball an extra split second and then coming up. It felt so much more about Russell to me than it did.
It didn't seem
Shot.
Like there was a bunch of rhythm plays.
No.
There were guys that were wide open.
They
on
got
rhythm
into
plays.
The rhythm. They're just 1, 2, bing, bang, boom, up and down the field. It didn't feel like that at all.
Yeah, you're not going to get into rhythm when Joey Hunt is blocking Fletcher Cox, when your 3 running backs are down, when a 210-pound tight end is over there trying to set the edge, when you have how many active wide receivers? 4 on your whole roster? Yeah, oh, go get into rhythm against the 3rd-best 3rd-down defense in the league and one of the best D-tackles. Yeah, go get into rhythm. Not going to get into rhythm, yet you have 400 yards of offense and you had the stones
you know
in
who
the
I
biggest
thought
moment
really, you know
to finish the game with that play call.
Takeaways.
All right, you want a tidbit?
Tidbits.
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 Okay, well, I guess all of these, I'm going to just push the envelope. I'm going to just fight with you guys, tooth and nail on all of these.
It's playoff time.
If DK Metcalf is already rocking the two like LT dangling earrings,
yeah.
the nose stud yes. and the nose loop, if yes. he's rocking those as a rookie.
Not to mention the pacifier.
What is going to happen when he turns into a foundational Hall of Fame Julio Jones-esque player? If you're doing that as a rookie right now,
I don't know,
pacifier,
man. I got to disagree
nose
with you again.
Stud, nose loop, earrings.
I don't think he's a weird guy, though.
Yeah.
He's not that weird when you talk. I mean, we've talked to him. He was talking about his chef.
I didn't say he was weird. I'm saying if you're willing to rock that now, what kind of fallopian double neck tattoos are you going to be rolling with?
I mean, obviously, I'll root against the Felix Fallopes. I think that's never a good look for anybody. But I don't know. He's not a Chad Johnson type.
He's not ever talking about himself. He's not ever talking about his accomplishments. He's not ever throwing anyone under the bus. He's not ever pointing at his competition.
Has not been a diva or anything like that.
The only thing that's different than anything is those three things. Two nose rings and a binky.
And a passy.
That's it.
He's got his passy. Other than the passy, there's not much.
Yeah, two nose rings and a binky. Otherwise, that guy is very normal.
So you don't think a face tattoo's coming?
No.
I don't think so.
No.
I don't. I think I'm with Howdy. I think he's two nose rings and a binky away from complete normal.
He's a two nose rings and a binky guy. That's who he is.
And by the way.
That's just who he is.
I love it. I think it is beautiful. I think it's great that he can just go out there.
It doesn't seem like
you
love it.
Oh, absolutely not.
It seems like you're kind of down on DK.
You hate it.
You can't stand it.
All I'm saying is if you are that eccentric as a rookie.
It's not eccentric.
Typically, that doesn't
you
get
are such
down.
An old man now. That does not make you eccentric anymore.
Oh, you're right. How many other Seahawks players in 11 years have you seen rock
that just means
pacifier,
he has style.
A nose stud, a
that's
nose
just because none of them have enough
LT
style
earrings.
To figure it out. If Nico Thorpe had thought of it, believe me, he would have done it.
Takeaways.
Here's a takeaway for you. Okay, there's nothing to do with DK's jewelry. Do you remember when in that playoff game, Julio Jones ran a little slant route? He went down to the ground.
Yes.
He caught the slant. He changed direction before Deshaun Shedd.
That was the game we watched at your house together.
Yes, it was. And I think I rewound that play a few
of course
different
you
times.
Did.
I'm like, look at this.
No.
This guy's 6'3" and 220 pounds, and he slides, and he gets up, and he moves, and he changes direction.
He literally caught a ball on a slant, fell down,
correct.
Got up, turned around, and Deshaun Shedd still couldn't get to him. That's how badly he had beaten him off the line
of scrimmage.
I have
been downplaying the whole Julio Jones and DK, and I've loved the production this year, and the numbers are astounding. He's exceeded anybody's expectations save for Jake Hughes. So I think Jake thought he could do this season. But that touchdown he caught was the first time I said, in my mind at least, wow, that's Julio Jones. That is the ability at that size to run full speed, to fully extend, to catch the ball with his hands, to tumble to the ground. He then somersaults to the ground. He gets up, and he finishes the touchdown before the DB can touch him
pretty
while
amazing.
He's on the ground.
It's amazing.
At that size and that strength and just that frame, you don't see it.
And he's that far by him, right?
Yes.
I mean, he was that far by him on that play. He was that far by him on the play that Russ missed him down the right side, obviously.
Yes.
You mentioned the pressure. And he probably was that far by him on the final
third
and 10. It just Russ underthrew it and allowed him to come back for it. Maybe in some ways it was almost a safer catch.
So is DK Metcalf have the opportunity to be what his coach called a foundational player and his quarterback is called a Hall of Fame talent? As you've watched this unfold over the course of this season, you now look at it and project ahead in year two and year three that you got your guy.
So can I ask you a question on that? And you'd have to answer this. I don't know. I'm not asking because I don't think it's true. Did he run the wide variety of routes that it takes to become a complete wide receiver? Or was this mostly just goes and fades and some of the things that people said were the only things he could run? Did he show the full complement of being able to run everything a great Julio Jones-style wide receiver can run?
This season?
Yeah.
I think you've seen that evolve over the course of the season. You've seen the comebacks.
Okay.
You have seen the back shoulders. You've seen the in-cuts. You've seen him absolutely toss dudes on 15-yard ends, sometimes for pass interference penalties. So, yes, I think you ran. I mean, if that number legitimately was a 1 on a scale of 1 to 10 at Ole Miss, which it was a 1 what they asked him to do. He never had to read post-snap and adjust a route at Ole Miss. So if that was a 1 at Ole Miss, I think by, I don't know, Jerry Rice standards is a 10 or Julio Jones is a 10. I think this year he climbed from that regard to a 6 or 7.
Mm.
And I think his hands over the course of the season equally. Like early, I thought there were times like, ooh, just not a natural pass catcher. And you know what he does every single day? He does a jugs machine. Who's one of the last ones off the field? He's one of the last ones off the field. What did you see in that game? hand catches, something that he missed on 6 weeks prior to that in Philadelphia.
And yet, of all of the plays he made in that game with his hands, none of them were my favorite DK Metcalf play in that game.
Oh.
By far, my favorite DK Metcalf moment came on a throw to David Moore.
Four-man rush. Russ looks. Now he fires inside. Reaching out, making the catch. First down, Moore jumps over a tackler and is dropped inside the 45-yard line. Epps brings him down. David Moore has come up big today.
I think it was that play. I may have it wrong. Where he just came in and obliterated the dude downfield.
Yes.
I thought it was farther downfield, but he obliterated him.
He did it on Marshawn.
It was awesome.
On Marshawn.
Maybe, I think it was that one.
He
I think
said
it was on
three times in the last 2 weeks. Downfield.
I think it was on the Marshawn.
The third and one.
Third and one.
Great call.
Little throw out of the backfield. I think it was actually on that. But he's down there. He's just blotting out the sun. He's just taking safeties out. Like, get out of here. He is willing and able to block downfield. He's really fun, man. I'm really glad he's on this team.
By the way, that third and one call, an excellent call by Shoddy. That's what should have been called in the 2014 Super Bowl. That exact play.
A sort of pause and wait, one?
Yes, that exact play they ran to Marshawn where Russell could have been on the move.
Yes,
absolutely the play that should
100%
have been
agree.
Called.
Takeaways.
Okay, here's a little tidbit for you.
Tidbits.
Joey Hunt.
Howdy's guy.
Yeah. Now, you're not a WWE guy at all. Ever? Were you ever a WWE guy?
Yes. We've talked about this 100.
Okay. So you know who Mick Foley or Mankind was?
Of course I do. Yes.
Okay. All right.
What the heck is wrong with you?
What?
I know we don't see each other every day anymore.
It's
but
been
like,
a long time.
I know, but we've talked about this for years. I'm supposed to be the one with the bad memory. You're confusing people. You're supposed to play your role.
Joey
I'm
Hunt.
The one with the bad memory.
Joey Hunt is Mankind. Or Mick Foley, or any number of different characters that guy was over the years.
Cactus Jack?
Same. There you go.
Oh.
Same
exact I never body. Watched it or anything, but I do know Cactus Jack.
Do you remember when he went off the cage?
Yes, okay. Of course.
Same body. He's got the same body as Mick Foley. He's got the same, he gets physically, remember, he just gets
I thought he had the same body as Howdy.
He physically humiliated. No, Howdy's got broad shoulders.
It's true.
Really, really.
Are you saying, you're saying Howdy's a little bit better suited to be an offensive lineman in the NFL than he is?
Yes. Same physical humiliation. I don't think you see a player get just physically abused the way that he does on a field at times.
Big pause, man.
The same toughness, but the same beloved nature by his teammates, and I think even his peers, because that dude never, ever backs down. Because he gets right back up on that next play and says, okay, if you're going to ragdoll me and toss me and run through me, that's all right. I will get right back up again, and I'll be right in your chest.
Right in your what?
Right in your chest.
Okay.
Yes. That's not the note that I wrote to you.
No, you wrote something else. I was curious whether or not you were going to talk about it.
Right into your sternum. Mm. Right into your jaw. And I don't care if you're going to just thrash me out here. And the number of times this season in primetime, think of like your Joey Hunt's family or his buddies back at TCU. And you watch, you're like, dude, I'm so psyched, man. Look at Joey. Oh. And they show that highlight.
They do
it's
every
like,
time.
Every time.
It's like Rocky just getting completely destroyed. Every time he gets hit, he gets destroyed.
Yes.
Every single
true.
Time. And he never gets just nudged.
No.
He gets crushed.
He gets run over.
And like, 75% of the time, he does an okay job and a pretty good job.
Yes,
25% of the time, he
run
gets
over.
Killed.
Yes. And you know what? Drago went to his corner and he told his trainer, the guy is like a piece of steel.
Yes.
And I bet you Fletcher Cox, right? It's like, that dude just keeps, how does he keep
I bet he
up?
Doesn't. Fletcher Cox didn't seem to have much of a problem at all. I don't know.
He just keeps getting up.
Really? Because they ran 17 times for 19 yards. So I don't know whether Fletcher Cox was going back to the sideline complaining about,
Joey Hunt.
I can't do anything out there, coach. It's Joey Hunt,
you
man.
See this guy?
Like, Mankind.
He's 5'6".
Cactus
you see
Jack.
Him?
Nothing I can do.
How about when he tossed Fluke, by the way?
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't just a little Joey Hunt.
He tossed Fluke
he
right out
He tossed 350-plus pounds of Fluke. But there is something about Joey Hunt, man. I love the fact that he just never quits. And by the way, he's also not practicing because he has a fibula injury. And I wonder if, you know, that's when the season ends, is going to be much, much more significant. Pretty amazing, tough dude. Takeaway. Ready for a little takeaway?
Yes.
Takeaways.
The combination of L.J. Collier, Shaquem Griffin, Ziggy Ansah, and Brandon Jackson is the equivalent. I thought about this now,
okay.
Long and hard.
Yes.
As far as their pass rush and their ability to get home is the equivalent of Lojack, Nick Reed, Red Bryant, and anybody you want. Anybody.
Well,
that,
you can't leave Quentin Jefferson off his list. He's been okay. I mean, like you're just looking at sort of the back end of this.
Yeah, I'm talking about the back end. Quentin's a starter now,
right? Okay.
Because of some of the different injuries, and Quentin's got 5 sacks and fell into a couple more.
It does look a little bit like the 2009 Seahawks.
It is pretty stinking crazy. Like, the LJ was a healthy scratch in this game at one of your biggest needs.
That was sad.
That was really
tough. I didn't
want
to see that.
Mets, that's your first round pick that you want to just see grow and get a little bit better and more confident in that guy that can be violent and he's not even suited up. Shaquem, God bless him. But go watch his 10 rushes. It is like, wow. I mean, it's just impossible at 230 pounds when any of these tackles, especially at this stage of the game, get their hands on you, you've got no chance.
I thought maybe we were going to do this a little later, but we might as well do it right now. Can I play you something? Can we talk about this for just a moment?
Sure.
Okay. Let me just play you a play that happened in this game. I think it was in the second quarter, but let me just play it and we can talk about it for a moment.
Sanders in the backfield. Play fake. McCown is going to keep it. He's going to run right side. He's going to turn upfield and dive for a first down as two Seahawks collide on the far side.
Okay, those two Seahawks were Shaquille Griffin and Ziggy Ansah, who ends up being hurt, so I'm sorry for that. What was not described in the play is that Ziggy Ansah is chasing after Josh McCown.
Unabated.
And he can't catch him. McCown is outpacing him. If they were both running a sprint, Brock, is it possible that Josh McCown outruns Ziggy Ansah? I know you guys told me he's underweight. Maybe he is. Are the pads too heavy? Like, what is the... How is Ziggy Ansah this bad? You and Jake Heaps chest bumped in our studio.
Chest bump.
You chest bumped in our studio over this guy.
Yes.
Brock, I think you can make an argument. I don't say this.
But let's be clear, you were excited about Ziggy Ansah.
I was, but this is awful.
How do you were excited?
Is he worse than Luke Jokel? Is he worse than Eddie Lacy?
No.
He's terrible. He's awful. He got outrun by 40-year-old Josh McCown.
That didn't happen.
What the heck?
Do you want to know what words I uttered at that moment?
I don't. I don't think. Can we repeat them here in the podcast?
Oh, come on.
You think Brock and Salt Podcast.
My family. You think I ever swear?
Yeah.
No, I don't.
I swear for my family sometimes. Then kids tell me, Dad, we heard you say that. God,
I said right. Even worse than any swear word out there that you can say about a football player.
Oh, you called him a jag?
Nope.
Just a guy?
I said that guy has lost his love for football.
That's
the only way to explain that on a football field
terrible.
For a guy that ran 10, 8, 900 meters at BYU.
He's a sprinter.
Yes. So the only way to explain that is that guy.
He
just
needs some Michael Bennett pads.
He just lost his love.
He needs the Michael Bennett pads. I think the pads are too heavy.
I'm sorry, man. You don't love to play football. Just unfortunately don't love to play football. And that was a bummer.
Takeaways.
All right, last couple.
Yeah.
Tidbits.
Oh, you want a tidbit from
tidbit.
Me. Here's a tidbit. JJ the Jet Plane and George Fant are going to be really good here for a long time.
I don't think anyone knows who JJ the
sure
Jet Plane is.
DeMarco Jones. The guy, maybe I was chest bumping incorrectly about Ziggy Ansah. Maybe I said George Fant would get double digit catches. But who is the guy that
almost
I was watching from day one at training camp and at mini camp?
It was
DeMarco.
The first guy you couldn't wait to see.
DeMarco Jones.
He's played pretty well
when he's not
been asked to play left tackle.
Correct.
He's not a left tackle. Let's be clear. He's not a left tackle. But
he will take the place of Fluker or Upati and be an upgrade as he was in this game for Upati. He played really good. You did not see him get humiliated. You did not see him get embarrassed. You see him pass protect very, very well. Is he a 350-pound mover of men? Is Fluker and Upati are a guard? No, not necessarily.
And is that part of the reason they couldn't run?
I think it was a little more of the whole entirety. I can't put it just on him. I think with Fant and him, but those two can pass protect. And if this thing is going to evolve and you're going to put more of it in years to come on Russell from the pocket, those two, I think, are going to be pieces and foundational pieces for a long time. Okay, last little takeaway for you.
Takeaways.
They got to take the ball away in Green Bay if they're going to win. Projecting ahead to Sunday, that is now three games in a row where you have not taken the ball away. That is the first time, I believe, this year. I think in marquee games, they were 0-3 in other games where they did not get a takeaway. And the only reason I think you come out of that one with a win was Russell was remarkable and you were playing Josh McCown for 3.5
And you didn't give the ball away either.
No, you did not. That,
if they had given the ball away at any point, I don't know if they win that game.
Russell's not yet won in Green Bay. Right? That building has been a disaster for decades, seemingly, for the Seahawks going in there. Part of that is Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers. Like, elite quarterbacks are always good in their own home building, just as Russell has beaten Aaron every time at CenturyLink
Field. They're going to end up playing Kaiser. Don't worry about it. It's going to be the Deshaun Kaiser show.
If they don't take the ball away from Green Bay, if that is a zero again on that column for the fourth consecutive game, I don't think they can win.
Ben Roethlisberger, Matt Ryan, Carson Wentz, Kyler Murray, Drew Brees.
Yes.
That's 5 of 17 games where the Seahawks played at least a half against the backup quarterback because the first guy got injured.
Don't forget Carolina. They played against the backup quarterback.
That's true. Too. Well, I mean, yeah, I guess that one's true, too. That's yeah,
the Saints,
they started 6 of 17. That's remarkable. It really is incredible what's happened this year. All right, last one here, Mark. Give me one more tidbit.
Takeaways.
You mentioned earlier about Russell Wilson's scramble. The one thing that stood out to me, it's been a long time. I think I've seen it in high school. It's been a long time. Maybe I've seen it even in college. Do you realize on that first scramble of the game where he escaped, as he was running, he used to pump fake. And even 10 yards down the field, sometimes defenders can't help themselves.
Yeah.
They don't know.
Ah.
Yeah, they just jump up in the air like when they pump fake. Defenders have gotten a little bit better at that, and he was so far past the line. But if you go back and watch that, you're going to see Russell point like he's pointing to a blocker, like DK Metcalf. He's pointing to somebody to come block that linebacker. And that linebacker paused. Yes, he paused for that moment, allowing ultimately Russell to juke him and pick up the longest run of the season, it felt like, for him all year long. But when you talk about a game slowing down in the best quarterbacks, in the biggest moment when the stage gets the brightest, and why this guy is super special, and you argued earlier in the podcast, maybe the best player in all the NFL.
He's in the conversation.
Amidst
for sure.
That chaos, amidst scrambling, where you have no idea you could get ear-holed at any second, he's running, and he's got the wherewithal that the game slows down so much that he can point a finger at that linebacker that is ready to kill him, make him pause, then juke and get the first down. To me, that was a pretty emblematic of a guy that just plays at a different speed when the game gets bigger.
Those are takeaways. Those are tidbits. We still got to go around the NFL and then the return, triumphantly, of Good News, Bad News, Known As, all still to come here in the Brock and Salk podcast. All right, we're here. It's the new year, Brock. Brock and Salk podcast episode, whatever the heck it is. I'm no longer keeping track. That much I know. I definitely lost track of that over the holidays. I lost track of everything over the holidays. You basically don't work for 2 weeks and like the whole, like everything.
You had good holidays, huh?
I had a great holiday. You know how much I love New Year's.
Oh, you missed
I had
Christmas.
A great time. Your buddy Jeff helped me out with a nice place in Suncadia. And we had a blast. Yeah, it was so much fun over there. Ice skating. Yes. Avery was doing her ice skating. I tried for a good 45 minutes. To master the hockey stop, can't do it. I just couldn't. And my friend Matt, who was with me, got it.
Did you fall down?
No, but no. I can't get my body to fully commit to what it takes to do it.
Yeah.
I've gotten good at skating backwards, and I kind of figured out how to do a 360, a little spin move. But the hockey stop was eluding me.
What is that, when you're skating and you just gotta,
Stop like quickly like that?
Yeah.
And I
if you're going to play hockey.
I know. I feel like the stop is going to be an important part
stop
of it.
Stop and the turnover, front to back. Those are the two things you got to learn how to do.
Got to be able to do that. And I'm not quite there yet on either of those. So I'm getting there. I'm
working. You might just have to go faster.
See, that's the scary
part. I think you have
part.
To go faster in order to do the hockey stop.
I think you're right, but... But, you know, there also comes with a risk factor, maybe more so even than the third and 10
remember,
play that
he's
Brock
got
said
a
wasn't risky.
He's got a bulky knee. He's got a bad back.
Right. That's a high percentage play,
there's
Mike.
There's
going to
be a sports
it.
Hernia. Yeah. You remember when I said I had a sports hernia and our friend over at the Seahawks told me that because I didn't play sports, I couldn't have a sports hernia? That was really obnoxious. All right, we're going to go around the NFL. I got 4 or 5 quick notes on the wild card weekend that was and kind of what's to come. First of all, was that the end of the Patriots dynasty? That has been... The wide-held view that the Patriots dynasty is now over, that was it. And you hear people talk like, okay, it's over now. Are you sure?
No.
I'm not sure either. Now, maybe Brady ends up leaving. I don't think he is. I think Brady's going to stay. I think when it's all said and done, Brady ends up. Now, I just watch. By the time this comes out, I'm sure he'll have like said that he's leaving and he's going to San Diego or L.A. or whatever. But if I have to guess... Belichick stays, Brady stays, and they rebuild around him this year, and they're right back in the playoffs next year.
If I have to guess, he's going to sign a 2-year deal, and Robert Kraft is going to be right in the middle of that. It's not going to happen. He's not going to go anywhere else, not going to play for anyone else. And, oh, look what happens for the Patriots. They have the deepest receiver draft in the history of the draft. The biggest need they have at running back and wide receiver.
And N'Keal Harry enters his second season.
You don't have one.
He gets better.
You don't have two. You don't have three. You have like 15 different options. They manipulate the board. They go all in. They get multiple first and second round picks. And all of a sudden, guess what Tom Brady has? Game changers around him.
Are they missing anything other than wide receiver? I mean, I watched that team play. I guess they could use a tight end.
Correct.
But, so they could use another, because they've, for years, always had very good tight ends.
And their line isn't what it used to be.
No, but it wasn't
bad. But
they're
bad. Not terrible. Nope.
And they ran the ball okay, yep. And Sony Michel's pretty good.
They need a D-lineman.
Obviously, their defense is really good.
They need one elite D-lineman or two. Well,
I was really surprised.
Another receiver or two.
I'm not saying this as some Patriots fan. I was as excited as anybody watching what happened the other night, believe me. I think it's premature to start saying it's the end of a dynasty and the end of an era. Now, if Brady leaves, okay, maybe I guess we can have that conversation, but... I don't know. It doesn't feel like that's what's going to happen to me. So I don't know. We'll wait and see.
And those poor folks have been through so much.
I do. It's so sad, right? Did you hear? I hope people had a chance after the game ended. I really wanted to hear the press conference because I was curious to see what Belichick would say. And I like Belichick press conferences in general. I enjoy listening to how nervous all of the reporters are and how they all kind of trip over their words. And then I also enjoy trying to guess how Belichick is going to answer, having interviewed him for a year once a week, which was terrible. I enjoy trying to guess. Heather was proud of me. I got two or three answers like dead on accurate. But the best, and I we have the question here with it, right, Hattie? This reporter, I don't know who she is asking a question about the fans. She's obviously writing a story about the fans because she also asked Brady kind of the same type of question. And unfortunately, as Belichick is wont to do, he picks out one little phrase that you've added that maybe you shouldn't, and he just crushes her for it. It's terrible.
I know this is a disappointing evening for you, but Pat's Nation, your fans have stuck with you through thick and thin. Social media, they still love you. Do you have any message for the fans who are so supportive of you and the team?
Okay, first of all, couple of little, tripping over a word, which happens. It happens to all of them.
Nervous, big stage.
And it's Belichick. You know he's going to kill you. And so everybody who asks a question...
I better go Colin Paisley.
Yeah, they do. They turn into Colin Paisley talking to Jack... Jack Zerentic? Yeah. They all... Mr. Jack? Yeah. Cactus Jack? They all do it. But unfortunately for her, she went one phrase too far, as Belichick gets her for.
Yeah, we appreciate our fans. I wouldn't say it's been all that thin around here, personally. Maybe you feel differently, but I haven't heard too many fans say that. So, yeah, of course we appreciate our fans. That's, we have a great relationship with them. They're here for us, and we always try to perform our best so they can be proud of the way we perform.
Oh, so mean.
He loves his...
Oh, he does. Yeah, that's his fan. That. Mm-hmm. He'll snarf into that microphone and give him the opportunity to.
I don't know how thin 10 Super Bowl appearances.
Right, thick and thin. I don't know about thin. Maybe you feel differently. Maybe you feel like I should have gone to 11, but I feel like going to 10 was pretty good. So funny. All right, so there was that. The other thing from that game that stands out to me is Derrick Henry is awesome. Mm-hmm. He's always been awesome. Have you seen those like his stats from high school where they show them every game he has 300 to 500 yards and 4 to 6 touchdowns on the ground?
Man, child.
So crazy. And he was fantastic at Alabama, and he's been amazing with Tennessee. As long as he's healthy,
That's key.
Is right there amongst the best in the league.
Because it's been a first couple of seasons he wasn't great.
I know.
He was like, wow, he was amazing in Alabama, but now he's like.
He's really
good.
This is not Eddie Lacy Redux. He's excellent. He's not fat. He is fast. He is huge. He is powerful. And they have a very good offensive line. So two things that come out of this for me. Questions for you. One, would you pay Derrick Henry if you were the Seahawks? If they don't want to pay him the big money, the Le'Veon Bell money that everybody, that running backs want, is he worth it? You don't know what's going to happen with Chris Carson. You don't know what's going to happen with Rashad Penny, who's been, shown flashes. But if Kyle were here, he would tell you that he's terrible. You need a running back right now you're giving the ball to Travis Homer and Marshawn Lynch.
Yeah.
Would you pay big money this offseason to bring in Derrick Henry?
I would not. Nope. I think there's another Derrick Henry out there, and his name may be Jonathan Taylor. Right. I think that we have seen a little bit of a resurgence in this league, a league that doesn't tackle. A league that doesn't put pads on very often. And what have we seen this year? And you saw that little graphic come up even during the Seahawk game, right? The
teams that run the ball.
Yes, the top four passing teams didn't make the playoffs this year. Top four rushing teams all made the playoffs. Three teams went on the road, won wild card games, and And Tennessee did it solely with their run, and Baltimore's got the MVP of the league because they've gone to a power run game. And this is not only a deep wide receiver draft. There are some kids coming out of this draft that play really hard, that run really hard, that are really dynamic dudes. I want to find the next Derrick Henry.
I know. He's like the one running back out there that when I watch him play, I'm like, yeah, I think I'd pay him because I think he fits so much what the Seahawks want to do. Except
for
this. Took
a beating at Alabama.
Except, I know, that's a problem. Here's the second part of it, though. He's got creases to run through. Why can't the Seahawks offensive line be as good as the Tennessee group? Like they've spent ungodly amount of resources on their offensive line.
Because I think Taylor Lewan was a top 10 pick. I think their right tackle, Jack Conklin, was a top 10 pick. Because I think you've got multiple first round, pretty unique dudes right there.
And Tom Cable didn't draft those guys too, so that helped.
So, you know, and I think there are times, Mike, this year that people have looked at the Seahawks and said, man, why can't we run the ball?
No, and it's good. I'm not crushing the Seahawks offensive line. They've obviously been much better this year.
Yep.
But after watching them rush 17 times for 19 yards, and I know they got some injuries there, I'm not killing them.
New left tackle, new left guard, new center.
I understand. I am not killing them for it. It's just when you watch Tennessee do what you know they want to be able to do, you know, it's a little bit frustrating. Yep. So, all right, both quarterbacks have to touch the ball in overtime in the postseason. I say this every year. It is not about the Saints losing. It is not about the Chiefs losing. It is just about what is right. Mm. There is no excuse. If you want to tell me that the current system is better than it used to be, when you could just go down, kick a field goal, and win the game, which is stupid in today's NFL.
Correct.
Today's system is better, where a touchdown wins it and a field goal, the other team gets a chance to match. Great. It is better. But in the playoffs, I'm sorry. You can't let, in consecutive years, Patrick Mahomes and Drew Brees sit on the sideline while the other team scores a touchdown. And I know that the argument, there's two arguments against this. One is the wear and tear on the players. Fine. In the regular season, it's not important enough in the regular season. Life can be a little bit unfair. Fine. That's the way it goes. Sometimes you win or lose based on a coin flip. That's an okay result, I think, in a regular season. It's frustrating. Mm-hmm. It's not perfect, but okay, I get it. Wear and tear is hard, and fine. In the postseason? Don't give me wear and tear. They're in the postseason. Mm-hmm. You think there's one player on the Saints this year or one player on the Chiefs last year who's going to say, oh, yeah, you know what? I'm glad I saved my body a little bit and didn't give my quarterback a chance to go down and score? Zero. There's not one. Maybe if Ziggy was on that team. I don't know.
And it would just be one, saying. Right? You would just say, okay, you scored a touchdown, fine. The Saints now are in sudden death. They got to score a touchdown, and then the next score wins, right?
No. I think that you have to give teams an even number of possessions in overtime in the playoffs. You just give them a shot. Give both teams a shot. It should be even. And here's why. Because it comes down to the second point I was going to make against the second argument. The second argument is play defense. Defense is part of the game. Yes, you're right. Defense is a part of the game, but it's not 50%. And even if we take out special teams, it's not 50% of the game. Offense is 70% of the game. Quarterbacks are 65% by themselves. The game is engineered to offense. Every rule change that has been made in the NFL over the last 15, 20 years has been to benefit the offense. The quarterbacks are the highest paid, best of all time. This game is built around them.
I was actually tracking,
not around defensive players.
I was tracking with you for most of the way, and you've already seen them evolve from just the field goal to now needing a touchdown. And you know what? If they evolved and said, okay, you score a touchdown, the other team will still get their chance
to
score a touchdown. But at that point, then you've got to play.
Why?
Then at that point, it becomes, you do have to play defense. You do have to play special teams. You do have to play those other phases of the game. I don't need to see them going back and forth and back and forth. Like, stop them. Go ahead and make that play.
But why does the team that lost the coin toss have to stop them more than the team that wins it?
Why is the team that decides,
why are they being punished?
Why is the team that decides to take the ball early and they go down the field and score will always seemingly have one more possession than the opponent if they want the ball to score?
What?
Right? At the beginning of the game, if I want the ball to score.
The other team then gets the ball at the beginning in the second half.
Yeah,
so
but then
it evens out.
And then you get the ball, and then I get the ball.
But it evens out. They both get a chance to start with the ball because there's an even number of halves.
Yeah, and I'm not
buying the 60. In this case, there's an odd number.
And I'm not buying the 65 or 70% that a quarterback so dominates.
Come on, man. You watch the NFL just like I do.
I do.
Every rule has been changed. If you want to leave the overtime rule the same, then go back to letting pass interference occur. Go back to allowing them to chuck the wide receiver. Go back to allowing all the things you used to be allowed to do. Get rid of all the hits, the penalties on hits and the quarterback and the receivers and the defenseless this and that. Everything helps the offense.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're going to help them, as much as the rules do, don't tell me that it's 50% of the game. It's not.
And by the way, if it is indeed 65% of the game, unfortunately, Kirk Cousins outplayed Drew Brees. Unfortunately, New Orleans, Drew Brees fumbled. Unfortunately, yeah, Drew Brees threw a pick. Unfortunately, no. Drew Brees wasn't that good.
But at the end of regulation, the score was tied.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of regulation, Brees went down and kicked a field goal just like he's supposed to.
They could have taken a timeout and taken a shot in the end zone. They didn't. And they played for overtime.
I get that. But why do they have to have a disadvantage in overtime? Both teams scored the same number of points.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, you're right. In some ways, Minnesota outplayed them, but the point total was the same at the end of regulation.
Yeah.
Why do the Saints now have to play at a disadvantage? They didn't do anything to deserve that other than lose a coin toss.
I bet you in time, when you make this argument in 2, 3, 5 years, I bet you that opposing quarterback will get his chance.
They have to.
I bet you it will, but I don't think it will continue tit for tat and all the way along, and we're going to keep it equal and fair after
I hope we're on episode 350 of the Brock and Salk podcast.com, and I can continue to make the argument that I am absolutely correct on. Did you think it was OPI on Mason Rudolph in the end zone?
No.
I didn't either. No. It wasn't as clear cut as last year where that was clearly pass interference and the Saints got jobbed.
Was a defensive pass interference on the 49ers against the Seahawks?
Yeah, it was sort of similar, right?
Yeah, somewhat similar. Those guys both engage in contact. You know there's going to be massive hand fighting. You know that that's the way it's going to go. Did he create a little bump? Did that body jolt a little bit? Yes.
But was it any worse? It was worse, I think, than what they called on Jacob Hollister this week. He pushed off more than Hollister did.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I'm not saying that means they should have called, but if it's a two different crews of referees, the whole thing.
There's no way they were going to call. There's no way New York was going to change that call whatsoever.
Yeah.
Have not done it all season
long.
If
they had called it, I don't think I could have complained about it, but I'm not sitting here saying they should have called it, which is kind of how I feel about the Jadeveon Clowney hit. If they had called the 15-yard penalty there, I don't think I would have been upset about it. I'm like, all right, he kind of got him. But not calling it, I don't think it was a mistake. It was in the borderline.
Agreed.
It could have been. Maybe it wasn't. I don't know. They decided not to. None of us even noticed it for five plays.
Yes.
I mean, we didn't even notice it in real time. So I don't know. I think the refs kind of got that one right. And then the last one to get to here is just the Buffalo-Houston game. Those are not playoff teams. I know they were in the playoffs, but those are not playoff teams. I don't know. I said this earlier. I don't know why the committee keeps putting Houston in the tournament every year. You know what's going to happen. They lucked out this year and drew a worse Buffalo team with a quarterback who doesn't belong. I know people keep telling me he's good. I'm not buying either of those two teams or that game. But it leads me to a question. Is a close game automatically a good game? Because that game was definitely close.
It was overtime.
And because of that, it's inherently exciting at the end.
Yes.
Because somebody's going to win and somebody's going to lose and the outcome is in doubt. But I found myself laughing more than rooting at the end of that game. I found myself chuckling at the ineptitude of both of those teams and virtually everybody out there other than Deshaun Watson, who made just a phenomenal play to win the game. Although, even that, I don't think he makes that play if two guys don't hit him from either side, which kind of lucks into him staying up.
I think it could still be compelling, even if not well played.
It was compelling. But was that a good game?
It was not well played.
It was terrible.
No, but it was still compelling theater.
And I'm sorry, and this makes it worse for me, listening to Joe Tessitore screaming about how it's an instant classic while the game's not good. You don't get to make that call while you're in the middle of it, Joe.
Sure you do.
You don't.
You're the voice. You get to make whatever call you want.
It's like somebody who's in like their middle school play acting like they're on Broadway. Like, you're not on Broadway. This is not a classic. This is not a back-and-forth unbelievable affair.
You make the big time where you're at, said the great Frosty Westrain.
I found myself feeling a little embarrassed for Joe, who was talking as if everyone was loving the game, when I think most people were, in fact, laughing at the game. And I just found myself feeling bad for him.
Compelling theater.
You're not on Broadway, man. I don't know how to tell you.
Good news.
Yeah!
Bad news. No news. Now, here's Brock and Salk.
When's the last time we did this? Been months?
At 8:45 every day, this song comes into my thought comes into my head.
Yeah.
Molly, that's good news. Good bagel.
Start telling her. No news. No news. No news. Nothing. Nothing to see here.
School. No news.
No news. Howdy, you're the only one today because, that's the way it goes. What's in the news?
Russell Wilson earned second-team All-Pro recognition for the first time in his career.
Good news. Good news. He deserved it. And I don't think there's any downside. I don't think there's any fear. Oh, gosh, it's going to get to his head. Oh, my gosh, he's going to still work as hard as he's ever worked. Oh, my gosh, is he still going to have that edge? There's no downside to this. I don't see it. I think it was he and Lamar were clearly the two best quarterbacks in the NFL this year, and he got rewarded for it.
Yeah, I would say bad news because I didn't think this was possible without Doug Baldwin. I still don't understand how Russell did this without Doug here to hold him accountable. If only somebody would hold Russ accountable. And this isn't doing it, Brock. When he is named second team All-Pro, don't you think this is going to go to his head? Don't you think this is only going to make him worse? Don't you think this is going to lead to all the problems that's always been there with Russell Wilson, the reason he struggled throughout the course of his career as much
you
as he
Doug
has?
You think Doug is at all conflicted this year watching this, honestly? In your heart of hearts, knowing and being around, you think he is at all conflicted at watching the success
not.
Of DK, the success
I
of Russ?
I don't think so. I don't think so, and I hope not. But I'm just impressed Russell was able to do this without Doug.
I mean, years
there to
from now. Are we talking like right now, top five? Or are we talking like years from now?
Do you think that at any point there is an argument to be made that Doug Baldwin held back Russell Wilson?
I think we can look back and say it. There's a chance. There's a chance.
He had his best season of his career without the ability to run much, without Doug Baldwin.
I'm going to say it had a lot more to do with Bevel, Cable, that deal than it did Doug Baldwin.
I think you're right about that.
That if I've got to like parse and argue.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree.
Infinitely more.
Darrell Bevel was that bad. I'm glad you finally recognized how bad Bevel. And I'm glad it took this long.
That system.
Thank you for recognizing that Bevel was the problem. Bad news.
Good news, bad news, no news.
Marshawn Lynch is expected to get more carries against Green Bay.
I think that's good news. I don't know. I mean, that 1.2 yards per carry average he had in Philly, they've got to run the ball better, and they should be able to. Green Bay, while Za'Darius Smith obviously gets after the quarterback, what's the other Smith they have? He's pretty good, too. I don't think they stop the run nearly the way Philadelphia does.
No.
I mean, that team,
no.
That's what they do.
Yes.
So I think it's a good thing. I just enjoy watching Marshawn out there. I love watching him run. I know that his yards per carry wasn't great, but a couple plays do stand out. His touchdown run was vintage Marshawn.
Yes, it was.
He was stopped, and he found a way to score, much like Chris Carson has done over the last couple of years.
Yep.
That was a very typical Marshawn Lynch play. I thought the play where they got him out in space and Russ threw him the ball, he looked like Marshawn, seeking out contact, knees out wide, doing his weird thing. Like,
yes.
He looks like Marshawn when he has room to run. So I don't think this is bad news. I can't quite call it no news, so I guess it's good news.
Well, is it that he's got to carry more of the load? Do you want him to carry it 15 times? You think he's really capable 3 weeks into his return?
10, 12 times and another 10 or 12 for Homer. I want it to be pretty even.
Yes.
I mean, Homer has not shown me anything incredible. On the other hand, he hasn't shown me anything bad either other than the fumble.
The biggest bummer for Homer was his first carry of the game
fumble.
He fumbled.
Because
I thought that neutered a little bit of his, just the aggressiveness and the wildness with which he played against San Francisco.
You know what he does okay is block.
Oh, yeah.
Have you seen
he's
that?
Willing.
Somebody, I forget who it was, posted on Twitter a rear angle of his chip block. Oh, my. He just pounds some dude.
Do you know what every Miami, former Miami running Hurricane running back does? Pass blocks. Mm. That is in that culture from day one of what you do, all of them, Edgerrin and Frank and all of them through the years. I'm going to say that's no news. Of course he's going to carry more of the load. That Homer is a four-string running back, and you're down to your fourth and fifth and sixth-string running back. So I'm going to say largely no news.
Good news, bad news, no news.
NFL coaching hires. The Dallas Cowboys have hired Mike McCarthy. The Carolina Panthers have hired Baylor coach Matt Rhule. And the New York Giants have hired Patriots wide receivers coach Joe Judge to be their head coach.
I'd like to say no news. I've only heard of one of these three people.
No, you've heard of McCarthy and Matt Rhule, right?
I heard of McCarthy, yeah.
The Baylor coach, Temple coach, Matt Rhule. Matt Rhule.
What?
I actually like the Matt Rhule hire for Carolina. Now, I don't know if I would have gotten a bidding war and paid him $60 million with the escalators to $70 million for him, but God bless him.
I'm not gonna knock Joe Judge either. Maybe he's the to me, that's what I want teams to do. If Joe Judge has the right personality to be a head coach and the right skill set, and I don't know that, but if he does, I don't care that he's only been a wide receiver coach or a special teams coach. You know how I feel. Every year, NFL owners go out of their way to hire whoever was the hottest offensive or defensive coordinator on the best team that year, which is a terrible way to find yourself the next great head coach because those skill sets are not the same.
Well,
if Joe Judge has the right skill set, great. Then they got the right guy, and good for them, and the Giants will get better faster than somebody who hired the best coordinator.
We'll ultimately see what Cleveland does, and maybe by the time of this broadcast and this podcast, it will be Joshy Boy McDaniels going to Cleveland. But I'll tell you, I'm going to say good news on those three hires. Dallas went conventional. They went to the McCarthy Project, to the guy that had spent the last 9 months since he was fired, getting himself and his staff and everything ready.
We'll make Dak even better, don't you think?
I think so. I think he's pretty solid. I think he'll put together a pretty good staff, but he is just traditional NFL stuff. Carolina says, nope, give me a guy that's innovative. Give me a guy that went to Temple, that totally flipped his offensive system while there. I think he'd be willing to evaluate that and also be willing to say, no, we're going to move on from that. Just like he moved on from the spread at Temple, just like he moved on to Baylor and said, nope, we're going to play defense in the Big 12. Like, he was innovative. He was a changer. He was a change agent. And then the New York Giants say, I don't really care what your background and pedigree is. Like, if you're an excellent coach, as John Harbaugh was never a head coach. He was a special teams coordinator. If you're the right guy with the right stuff, you're right for the job. So I'm going to say on those three hires, good news for the NFL.
Where are all the Sean McVay friends this year? They're not out there? No Sean McVay? No friends of McVay? No FOM? I guess not this year.
Good news, bad news, no news.
Tua Tagovailoa is going pro.
This year, though?
This upcoming
year.
Are
you going to play this year? I don't know, man. I don't know. I'm not sold on Tua. I think there's some other really good quarterbacks, and I'm not saying he's going to be bad. I think that he makes me a little nervous.
Okay, so you watched the Rose Bowl. You've watched Justin Herbert a couple different times. You were in person watching Justin Herbert go up against Jacob Eason.
I did not watch the Rose Bowl.
The Rose Bowl was absolutely
beautiful.
Why
would I watch the Rose Bowl?
Oh, because it's the most beautiful setting on planet Earth.
Watch that.
It's a great game, Jonathan Taylor.
I was busy.
Justin Herbert ran for 3 touchdowns. He didn't throw an awful lot, but he ran for 3 touchdowns. The Bengals are going to take Joe Burrow 1.
Yep.
You're the Dolphins. You're any of these other number of teams that need a quarterback. Justin Herbert, Tua Tagovailoa. Because I think Jake Fromm may go back to Georgia.
I'll take Tua over Herbert.
Over Herbert?
Yeah, just because he can move and all that. And assuming that we think he's going to be able to run when this is all said and done, I'll take Tua over that.
Tua Tagovailoa is going to go number 2 or number 3 overall.
Yeah. I mean, he's still got
overall, not number 2 quarterback, number 2 or 3 overall.
That's probably true.
I think he's a innately accurate and an innate anticipation. He's had just an unbelievable cast of characters to throw to at Alabama, but I think that those two traits carry over into today's
game. Bingo, man. That's like the essence of a good quarterback.
I would rather have Trevor Lawrence next year than any of the guys this year. I don't think that's a doubt, but yeah, I think two will be okay.
Good news.
Good news, bad news, no news.
Russell Wilson accounted for 96% of the Hawks' offense against Philadelphia.
Yeah, I figured this out the other day. Good news, by the way. It's always good news when you see that.
All but 19 yards.
It's really amazing.
17 carries by the running backs for 19.
How does all that happen?
4-string running back, no heavy tight end package, new left tackle, new left guard, new center.
And Fletcher Cox.
And only 4 available wide receivers on your active roster. And yeah, Fletcher Cox loves this matchup like Aaron Donald loves this matchup.
I was sort of hoping we were going to see a little bit more John Ursua. I was hoping he'd get a couple of catches in the game just to see what he does with the ball.
Yep.
But I guess that wasn't.
He'll get a game winner in Green Bay on Sunday.
Obviously. It'll be just like Jermaine Kearse. I really hope they beat the Packers, man. I want to keep doing this during the playoffs and all that, and I really do believe it. I think if they do beat the Packers, and I don't know how I feel about that one. I think that's a tough putt for them. I think if they beat the Packers, I think they win the following week.
And they're going to have to go to San Francisco, right? You don't give the Vikings any chance.
I absolutely give the Vikings
a chance.
Do you really? I'm not sold on San Francisco the way they've played down the stretch. If I have to take a team, I'm taking the Niners. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it would be out of the realm of possibility that Minnesota goes there and wins.
It's
very possible Jimmy Garoppolo throws 3 picks in that game and the Vikings win.
3 of the 4 road teams won on wild card weekend.
Yep. That doesn't usually happen.
It is going to feel, to me, really chalky this weekend. It just feels like, and the numbers always express this, that
bye week helps.
That bye week helps an awful, awful lot. And I think it's going to be really difficult for the Vikings to go to San Francisco.
All right, there's one long podcast as we have entered the new year. Hope you guys enjoy it. We'll be back with you guys next week, hopefully celebrating a Seahawks win over the Packers. Until then, Brock
Barn
is in the barn. See you, everybody.
Get to the chopper!